Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast. Let me tell you about my friends at Naked Vine, located at 1624 Clarkson Road in Chesterfield, Missouri, serving up all your favorite wine, whiskey, and local craft beers. Stop by and visit them this week for some great live music on Tuesday, December 11th. I'll be over there with my singer-songwriter storytelling showcase, 7 to 9, $5 cover at the door, bringing along my friends Langan Neubacher, Devin Cahill, Irene Allen, and Jeremy Essig for that show. Going to be a great time. Excited about that. And Thursday, December 13th, Bill and Carson from the Scandaleros. Friday, December 14th, John Bonham and Friends. And Saturday, December 15th, Brian Curran and Greg Silsby. Find all this information and more at nakedvine.net. Be sure to follow along with them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy the show.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Hey, this is Mike Morano from the Mighty Pies, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Hey. One side in motion, baby's pulling me into the sun with you. Boy. Pressing right on my back and potting me a bath right back to you. Boy.
Thank you.
Everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri, hanging out tonight with Mike Morano. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, this is exciting. Like, I love doing this show, and where we can kind of, you know, me and you have been buddies for a while now. I tend to see you at a lot of different shows, and we don't really get a chance to talk because it's always at of a concert or whatever, and it's true. Like, so it's kind of hard to have a conversation, but that's what this show's good for, is kind of we get a chance to get to know a little more about each other and hang out and talk about what you've been up to and stuff. So
so
thanks for having me over tonight.
Yeah, welcome to Benton Park, USA, right here. And thank you for all you do for the music scene around town. Just want to make sure you get your shout out, because what you're doing is great, just following countless acts around town and keeping it local and just informing everybody, literally everybody, and you're doing a great job.
Thanks, man.
For your service, man.
I appreciate that, yeah. Man, I don't know. There's just so much going on here, and I'm just trying to document as much as I can, as fast as I can, because it's constantly evolving. New groups getting started all the time, and a lot of guys, like yourself, play in several groups. So it's fun to kind of get guys on to talk about different projects and different things they're doing and stuff. So, but we got so much happening, and I just kind of, again, trying to catalog it all and like sort of be whenever I'm done, I kind of want to be like a time capsule type of thing. You know, it's like, This will all live on forever, but there's so much cool stuff happening like right now in St. Louis music. So, let's start at the beginning, man. Tell me a little bit. Did you grow up around the area, or did you move here?
I moved to the St. Louis area in 1996, originally from New York. Used to live, actually, just about an hour north of New York City. Had my family is kind of, and relatives are all from the New Jersey, New York area. So I just spent about the first 7 years of my life out there and moved out actually to Wildwood. So I really was raised in kind of like Wildwood area, mm-hmm. with the occasional coming out to St. Louis, like the city, for the sporting event or the music event.
Sure.
Yeah, that's kind of how it all happened. Always kind of had family spread out, so it was always nice to go back to the East Coast and visit and stuff like that. But yeah, just kind of resided here.
Was that like parents' work or something? Or?
Yeah, it was, Pops got transferred.
Sure.
You know, and just took the opportunity, leap of faith type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, especially leaving, you know, the rest of your family or his family,
right.
You know, siblings and parents and stuff like that. But I think in the end it turned out well.
Yeah,
for sure. And you know, I'm living in the city now, and that's completely different than the county.
Sure.
We all know, but it's actually a really fun place to live, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah,
yeah.
I guess
Was it always drums for you, or did you
play some other? It was always drums. I kind of got started because I saw my brother playing guitar. He started playing guitar and saxophone. He's 5 years older than me, and he was starting like in fifth grade. And when we moved out here, down the street there is a kid his age, and he happened to have a drum set. And they'd go over and play, and me and my other brother and like some other neighborhood kids would go see him play a little, just in the basement.
Right.
You know. And it's kind of hard to recall, but I guess I gravitated toward the drums for whatever reason. That friend ended up getting a new drum set. They knew I was interested, so they gave us his old drum set. And that's when I was about around 9, I want to say. 9 years old.
Yeah.
And it's just something that I always stuck with. It's taking the private lessons. Always did music in school as early as I could. Like percussion and stuff like that. Anytime I was able to do the jazz band or the pep band, did that. So through middle school, I was taking lessons. I was in the concert bands, the jazz bands. High school, did a little marching band. Did more of the fun pep band stuff, but always stayed with the percussion side of things. And then I was always drumming in the basement.
Right.
That was always like my outlet for as long as I could remember.
Yeah, man. I imagine that there's probably got to be a lot of appeal, especially to a young kid, just to get behind the kit and just, you know.
It's probably the ADHD is what they tell everybody.
Yeah.
Like, not just me, but just like, you know, everybody's got some inkling or diagnosis of ADD, ADHD, whatever you want to call it. Man. I mean,
look at Animal.
Yeah, just look at him.
I think he had something going on there.
Yeah.
But I think everybody can relate to something like that, you know, getting, like I said, having that appeal to the kit and the one to just make a whole lot of noise at first and stuff, but actually taking the initiative to take lessons and everything like you're saying and actually get good at it.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't the best practicer, obviously, like growing up or whatever, but it's not like the instrument was collecting dust in the basement. And plus, my parents put up with it, so got to give a thanks and a big shout out to them for, you know, like supporting the interests.
Yeah.
Of course. So.
So once the kit came to your house, did you and your brother and kind of jam and kind of put a band together kind of thing? Or
not really, because there's such an age gap there.
Yeah.
So I was always the younger leech, the annoying one, right?
Right.
Like, I would like sneak up and play his guitar. And sometimes I get caught and he get really pissed. Because, you know, I was supposed to be touching his stuff or whatever. But I'm the youngest sibling and everything. So we never really kind of connected in that sense because it was just that age gap. It's hard.
Right.
You know.
It's that scene from Step Brothers and like... Why are you so sweaty? I was watching Cops.
Yeah. Exactly. But he actually, as he left for college, he went to Belmont and then he went to New Orleans. And he's been living in New Orleans ever since 2003. And, you know, he plays with Trombone Shorty and he's still with them.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Very cool.
Even before he was in that, though, he was getting into the jazz realm and all that nice funky fusion-y stuff mixed with the jazz, and he left the house and I was coming up in middle school and high school, and so he introduced me to a lot of music. Now I think eventually when my path has taken me, I would have discovered that music eventually, right? I just got it at a nice younger age, which is really cool. And then my dad was always playing like Stax records and a lot of doo-wop bands, a lot of blues artists, a lot of Stevie Ray Vaughan, and KDHX was in my life at a very young age as well. So those two people, my brother and my dad, they were really responsible for like my listening diet and kind of seeing where I fit in. And from there, I just kind of went off on my own.
Sure.
Discovered new things.
Yeah, man. I mean, I can totally relate. Like, a lot of my childhood, you know, my dad was big on Southern rock and, like, his old country stuff. And I listened to, like, a lot of, like, Conway Twitty and different things. And, like, but a lot of, like, Allman Brothers and ZZ Top and Lynyrd Skynyrd and that kind of stuff. So I spent a lot of time listening to that music. So that was formed a lot of my early taste. But then after that, like, you know, it was fun to start discovering stuff on my own and discovering a lot of music backwards, you know, like you realize how many people were influenced by this guy or whatever and stuff like that. So that was the fun part too, is kind of deep diving into more and more records and stuff. So
yeah, I was fortunate enough to know that there was an importance to the history,
mm-hmm.
the lineage of where music came from.
Right.
And that's ultimately like what led me to jazz. Mm-hmm. And I also knew that doing or playing jazz was also a challenge and would just make me an all-around better drummer. I still think it's some of the hardest music to play. And I wish I could play it a little bit more, you know. I definitely have that itch still.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime I get a chance to practice, I always kind of want to go back into that realm, you know. But yeah, it's like you said, there's a nice backbone.
Sure. Yeah, man. Well, so I guess you do currently, every now and then, I guess, you guys don't have a ton of dates, but you're always working on different stuff behind the scenes and things. But with you kind of have two more jazzier projects you're part of right now with Transmatter Express and The People's Key, both those... with Matt Rowland, right?
Mm-hmm.
And is Ryan in both?
Yeah, Ryan Marquez.
Yeah.
So, People's Key, yeah, that's been a group since around 2013. And that came out of going to school, actually, at Webster, is where I went to college. And that actually did the music there, did like the jazz combos and stuff like that. And I met a lot of musicians there who I still keep in touch with today and play with. And that's kind of where the People's Key came out of, Ryan Marquez and Charlie Serpa. And Charlie Serpa's been a musician I've been playing with since like day one of Webster, you know. So, and he's just a fantastic musician. And yeah, we were all living in a house together at one point. 2012, 2013, somewhere around there. And we were just like jamming in the basement because we just all wanted to practice and get better. And the idea came from like playing a Green Day song just in a jazz style. It was Basket Case.
Yeah.
Like, all right, let's swing it. Let's do it about here, right? And like, wow, that kind of fits as like a bop tune. And then the band was born. So yeah, when I'm in town and I have the time, it's always fun to play with them. And this past July, we just released our first original music album. We've had a couple albums before where they're all just kind of covers, just in our own little jazz arrangements. But this is a full-length album of all original music.
Yeah.
And it's called Unlocked Doors, and that was released in July of this summer. And completing the group is, yes, Matt Rowland.
Yeah,
he's a ton of fun to watch on the guitar. He's a very talented guy. And Ryan on keys. That's really a great band. A lot of great players.
Ryan has a great jazz vocabulary, and he can play the funk, the rock, the soul, all that stuff. Also, he can play bass with his left hand, which, I mean, that's just amazing, too. Sometimes, playing with him, it's just like, I kind of get caught up and just like, man, he's really doing that, you know?
I saw the Greyhounds one night.
Yeah.
And they were playing as a three-piece, and is Anthony or Anthony's the keys, right?
I think so.
And Andrew's guitar. I might have them backwards. I know they're both. Anyway, but he on the keys, and I'm like hearing this great bass lines, and I'm like, where's that coming from? And then I realize he's doing it all with his left hand and stuff. I'm like, so that was like really really impressive. Like to see. I mean, that's the first time I'd seen somebody doing that, and knowing that Ryan can do that too, like it's really cool. But
yeah,
it was pretty wild. Like you're sitting here, you can hear it, but you're not seeing somebody up on a bass guitar or upright or whatever and stuff. Yeah. But
yeah. I mean, both fantastic players, and then you know what else could be said about Matt Rowland that hasn't already been said? And the guy's a monster.
Yeah.
And one of the nicest dudes you'll meet too. Super humble, and he's just always having a great time on stage. And that's also what makes it so fun to play with him. Because not only is he just super creative and in the moment, you can feel that he's having a great time.
Sure.
Like, he could probably have an absolute horrible day, and he's got a gig that night, and he'll lay it all out there for you.
Yeah.
And it's been an honor to play a little bit in Transmatter Express, you know. Those bands, Transmatter Express and People Ski, are kind of interchangeable with, you know, kind of the same members. But I've been lucky enough to record on a couple of singles that Matt has released this summer. Or he's continuing to release them. But yeah, just been fortunate enough, you know. He asked me to play on, record a couple tracks. So I was like, absolutely. That'd be great. Yeah.
Very cool. And then I guess nothing on the calendar right now with either of those groups.
Not right now with those groups, and I think that's just because as well, it's like everybody in those bands has about two or three other bands that might be picking up a little bit of steam and stuff like that, you know. So it's kind of hard to, when you have, it's hard enough when one person is gone a lot, right?
Yeah.
When you have like two or three people that have all these other commitments, it gets even trickier.
Yeah.
But
well, you can.
I wouldn't rule anything out for 2019. Sure. I'm sure there'll be something cooking right now. But right now, things are a little quiet.
Well, we do have a Facebook page for both the People's Key and Transmatter Express, so you can get involved there if you like what you hear. And then is the People's Key on all the digital platforms too?
Yes, I believe it's on Apple Music, iTunes, and Spotify. And same thing with the Transmatter Express.
Yeah.
So, best bet is just to go to Spotify. I mean,
sure.
Everybody probably pretty much has Spotify by now.
Yeah. That's the way to go, man. Having every song in your pocket, like, it's a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about, we do have another kind of a big all-star group coming together with Southern Exposure. Uh-huh. And you guys, I guess, kind of did some dates and then kind of put on the back burner, but you guys are back doing this is a kind of essentially a reunion show, right?
Yeah. Southern Exposure is a group comprised of me and my fellow bandmates from the Pines, Neil Salsic and John Hassan, as well as Charlie Serpa on sax, and the infamous Al Holiday on keys.
Yeah, man.
And the whole idea kind of started, man, about 3 years ago, before I was kind of like playing I just joined the Mighty Pines or whatever, and John and Neil had like a a gig in the Shaw neighborhood at a place called Thurman Grill. It's now Thurman's, which does like great jazz now. But they were doing like a Wednesday night thing. And they would switch drummer and keyboard players out. They'd do like a rhythm section thing. Kind of like a very low-key voodoo player thing. So when I met them around that time, they kind of got me in playing with that. And I'd learn more about Neil's background. He went to school at Loyola for like a year, you know, so he has some of that like Southern know-how of like New Orleans music, stuff I was exposed to at an early age. So I kind of had the idea and went to him. I was like, yo, what if we did like a night where it's just music of like Louisiana or like better yet New Orleans, because we both love the music. And it's like, yeah, we'll have John play and Charlie loves music. And oh, Al, he would be great, right? So kind of got the guys together and everybody's like, yeah, this sounds fun. Let's do it. So we had our first gig scheduled for December. Might have been 3 years ago this month, actually. But, and, you know, made the Facebook event and whatever. And before the first gig even happened, I was already getting inquiries about playing like Mardi Gras things. And what was going to be a one-off show? I didn't plan on doing this again. I was like, all right, we'll do this and it'll be fun. It'll be great. And so I started getting asked about, you know, Mardi Gras gigs. And I was like, oh, I think there's something a little more here.
Yeah.
So it kind of became a seasonal band, if you will. I guess 2016 was when we played like around the calendar. And we did like a Mardi Gras, and then we did like a springtime gig and a summertime gig, and then like we play like 4 or 5 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's kind of how it all, that was the creation of it. And basically all of our original projects started getting more steam, and we all kind of knew that, like, well, gotta push the original music. Sure. You know, Al was doing his thing, right? We were doing our thing. And that totally makes sense. There wasn't any hard feelings. Like, you know, just like, all right, we'll do it here. And there was no set date to pick it back up. I knew we wanted to do it again. I wanted to do it again. I knew Neil wanted to do it again. And yeah, so I think Neil was just like, man, I miss it. And I was like, well, yeah, let's do it again. And he's like, yeah, I'll ask around. Let's see.
Yeah.
And so we're doing it again. And it'll be our first time playing since, I think, like, Mardi Gras or, like, spring of 2017.
Right.
So, yeah, it is kind of like a reunion. But that is happening at the Broadway Oyster Bar on December 22nd, I believe.
I got 23rd.
I think I told you the wrong date.
Did you?
Yeah, it's Saturday the 22nd.
22nd. There we go. Yeah, that's going to be, I mean, and it's perfect at Oyster Bar, obviously, with that New Orleans, theme and everything. It fits in very well with everything there and the food and the vibe and everything. So,
yeah,
it's perfect for that. And it's just, I think I'd seen you guys, maybe it was at Mardi Gras or whatever. One of them, I've definitely seen Southern Exposure there, and it's just a party, man. So yeah, if you don't have plans for the 22nd, definitely make your way to Broadway Oyster Bar that night and come dance or some of your favorite New Orleans tunes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fun too. Like, you guys, I mean, it's just like hit after hit, you know. It's like, it's just all the kinds of good stuff in there.
Yeah, like to dig deep too. Gotta yeah, get the deep, like Dr. John cuts.
Yeah.
And also like the Alan Toussaint.
Sure.
You know, or the Lee Dorsey, stuff like that. So it's cool. It's like, you know, it kind of caters to a bunch of, like a large demographic.
Right.
That's the cool thing. It's like, I see a lot of people from all different like backgrounds, or like people like who go to like all the New Orleans shows, like all the New Orleans bands that come up to Oyster Bar or just come and they hang out at those shows, they'll be at this one, which is cool. You know, it's just fun doing, you know, having some time to do some music that you grew up loving.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. Let's talk about, you're also involved, and I believe this is where we first met. I think we first met on a a voodoo player's gig at Oyster Bar. Because the Pines were sitting in on a lot of those for quite a while. There was a good stretch where you guys were almost the house band down there a lot, you know. It's like,
yeah.
Which was a lot of fun. I mean, like I got, like I said, got to know Neil and John and yourself very well. But I'm pretty sure that's where he met. Again, it's kind of hard to tell which one of those gigs it was, but
yeah.
but you guys did a lot of shows with Sean, and then you're also sitting in on the Voodoo Prince show coming up on December 26th over at Broadway Oyster Bar on Wednesday night.
Correct.
This would be this is third time that you've done the Prince show with him?
Yes.
Two at Bootleg and...
Yeah, two at Bootleg, and then this will be the first time that it's at the Oyster Bar, or not at the Bootleg, right. Basically. Yeah.
But yeah, man, that's and you were saying like a big 10-piece band or something crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Horns and background singers and all kinds of stuff. So we've got a big old band going, and it's going to be another great night down at Oyster Bar. All your favorite Prince tunes, two sets, probably 30 songs or something.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Easily, at least for this show.
Yeah.
Yeah, easily 30.
Yeah, that's
I would assume. It always feels like 30.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like 25 or, you know, sometimes when you're only playing like 23 songs, it feels like 30 songs.
Right.
But, you know, it may not be quite 30, but sure. It's definitely a jam-packed night. And there's definitely some tunes that we like to go to Voodoo Land on. You know, it's just nice.
Is that the technical terminology?
I think that's the technical terminology at this rate, you know, like, man, just, you know, when the mood hits you, it's time to stretch, you know, and you got a big band, so you got a lot of opportunity for solos.
Yeah. What's that like for you playing with a guy like Sean? Like, I'm amazed at what he does with that show every week and just as a band leader and everything, the work that they put into that show every in and out every week, and it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, coming up at the end of this month, that was my first Voodoo gig 3 years ago. It was like late December. I think it was like Bob Dylan. And then I've been fortunate enough to be on, I think, 8 or 9 different Voodoo artist shows, and yeah, man, it's a locomotive, and Sean is the engineer, he's the captain, and yeah, he just it's a lot of fun playing with him. We just did the John Hartford night, which was great, and it's
I had a long summer day stuck in my head like all the next day, just sitting there humming along with it and on a long hot summer day.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
great time.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun playing in that band just because of the energy that it brings. Just did the last waltz, and that was something where we had done the band at Oyster Bar before, and then when the 40th anniversary came for the last waltz a couple years ago, we did it in Columbia at the Blue Note for the first time, and then we realized, oh man, we got to do a St. Louis one. So we have done it now 3 years at the Blue Note, and then the 2 years at Delmer Hall here in St. Louis, and just great, just fantastic, really kind of recreating that night and bringing up the guests and also playing, you know, a handful of other classic band tunes, you know.
And that night in particular, I think it's cool because you get to see so many different things that St. Louis has to offer, you know. It's like, and Columbia, too. But, you know, you get all those guest appearances, and you know, maybe not everybody knows JR from Mom's Kitchen or, you know, Al Holiday or whatever it is, you know, who all the different, you know, Gene Jackson and Hillary Fitz, and like, you know, maybe they don't go to see those shows around town, but they're going to see him that night and be like, man, I really, really like what he or she's doing, and like go see him, support more shows. So
yeah,
I really think that's cool. And that same thing goes for any of those Voodoo player shows. The fact that like I got introduced to you guys and discover the Pines through that, and, you know, getting to discover all your guys' original music along with all the great cover stuff you're doing with Sean and things too. So It's really a great networking tool for sure. I mean, the bringing the community, the whole city together on those nights and stuff. So
exactly. It's really, couldn't agree more.
Yeah, man. It's really a great thing that we've got happening down there.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. So come on out. Again, Voodoo Prince on December 26th. It's going to be another fun night. I think he's doing the week before. They're doing Led Zeppelin, so that'd be another wild night down at Oyster Bar. So, 2 weeks in a row, you're going to get some whole lot of dancing going on down there. Well, let's let's get into some Pines stuff. We do have another big show coming up for the Pines. You said you weren't an original member. Is that what you're saying? You joined the group later.
I joined the group when they were in their third year.
Yeah.
And I have been in the group for about 3.5 years now. So, that's kind of the main gig right now. Mm-hmm. And as far as gigging itself, literally, sure. And travel, just trying to put in weekend after weekend and going out on the road. And we have a little downtime in December, which is nice, but we've really been going hard since like May. May was like our last time where we had multiple weeks off maybe. But yeah, that's picking up some steam, which is great. And it's getting us on the road. And that's one thing that I'm trying to do a little bit more of, is get on the road and get that experience and playing with other bands, meet new bands, getting on the festival circuits and stuff like that.
Yeah, and then I feel like your guys' sound, I mean, a lot of people love that sound right now. Like, there's so many other great bands that are doing very big things that, you know, sound similar. So, you know, it's going to help you guys out that more people are exposed to that music, music and more and stuff. So
it's definitely a fusion.
Right.
It's a fusion of something. Of what it is, we're not so sure ourselves yet, but... Right. It's definitely something that is constantly evolving with the help of, you know, the musical climate and also our influences. Mm-hmm. It's like, almost like, you know, The Clash. All those guys had like different backgrounds and different big influences in what they were brought up in. And the same goes for us where, you know, I mean, I come from more of a rock, funk, jazz background. But I'm playing, like, you know, some bluegrassy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
With a little twist, though. I get to put my little twist on.
Right.
That, which is really neat. And it always kind of keeps it interesting. It allows me to learn more about maybe some of the stuff that they bring to the table that I wasn't familiar with. So, yeah, it's always kind of like, that's how it all kind of evolves, right? And... it's a lot of fun.
Did you say that kind of all spurred out of that Thurman's gig that you were doing over there?
I actually started playing... excuse me. I started playing with them before the Thurman's gig. Like, I knew they were... I went to see them play the Thurman's gig, yeah. Mm-hmm. I went for, like, a mutual friend of ours kind of introduced us. And then I was playing... I went to their gig. I met them. I had no idea they were looking for a drummer at the time or whatever, but they were kind of in between drummers or whatever. So I was talking to Neil and John, met them, and then I was playing like a month later at Venice Cafe with Andy Coco and Nate Hershey and Pete Lombardo, and John and Neil came to see me. I didn't know they were coming. And... kind of after that, Neil got a hold of me and he like invited me to a rehearsal, and that's kind of how it started.
Nice.
Yeah.
Out there recruiting, huh?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Unbeknownst to me.
Right.
But 3.5 years later.
Yeah, man.
I'm still here.
I mean, that's like, I don't know what you dreamed about as a kid, but for me, I just like, that seems to be like the dream, you know, getting out there. Your original music is taking you around the world to see all kinds of cool things and stuff, and
yeah,
it's pretty awesome.
As a kid, I had no idea or intention of really thinking that music would do these things for me. All I knew is that I was going to play and keep on playing. Didn't matter what job I had or where I took professionally, And I was actually in the restaurant industry, you know, for the first half of my 20s. You know, I was doing that pretty seriously, but I always was like, you know, teaching lessons and gigging on the side. And then, you know, the scales kind of tipped, you know, and playing became more evident in my life. And, you know, at 20 something, 26, 27, around that age, I was like, oh man, I think I could really do this if I just like do it, right? If I just go out there and just give it everything I got or whatever, and, you know, just take that leap of faith or and whatever. And yeah, so I've been kind of doing that. And as I've gotten older, I've figured out more of goals and things I've wanted. I feel like when you're in your 20s, early 20s, you're still a kid.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Right. And people who are in their 40s still don't know what they want to do, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like that was kind of me. And it was getting the opportunity to play with more people around town and breaking through in the scene, which is what I wanted to do in college. I would go see a lot of local musicians, whether like Funky Butt or The Feed or Dogtown All-Stars, all those guys. Like Willie Akins when he was playing jazz at Spruill's and stuff like that. That's I wanted to like break into a scene like that, and eventually I got there, which is great. So tying that into now being in a group that goes on the road, it really is eye opening and definitely it's worth the while, in my opinion.
Yeah, man.
At least for me.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, we do have a big show coming up for Mighty Pines on New Year's Eve, December 31st, over at the Ready Room in St. Louis, Missouri. And you're bringing along our friends Hillary Fitz Band.
Mm-hmm.
And this is your 90s freakout
night. Yes. It's originally our Halloween show. This year we decided to move it to New Year's Eve, just to change it up a little bit. Plus, we haven't played a home New Year's Eve show in like 2 or 3 years. Usually, we've done it in the past with Aaron Cam at 2720. But yeah, we're continuing our Halloween tradition on New Year's Eve this year with a full 90s set, possibly two. Might even be two this year. I gotta have to check my notes.
Yeah.
Yes, and with our fabulous friends, Hillary Fitz Band. Also a fantastic group. They are doing an 80s set. So we got 80s and 90s. Might even have some 2000s on the house music for the, you know, intermission.
Get everything.
The set break music. But yeah, come on out to that. It's going to be great. Costumes highly, highly encouraged as well.
Your best 80s or 90s?
Best 80s or 90s.
Yeah.
Because we're covering both decades.
All right.
Yeah.
That old Drew Lance wrote in from Hillary Fitz Band. He wrote in, ask him if he's ready to get some glitter on those beautiful drums, because your boy, it's going full 80s on New Year's when Hillary Fitz opens up.
For the oh, so, did he, huh?
Yeah, so that's what he has to say.
If he's going to help me clean it up, I'm great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess he's going full out glitter on that night, so, which, you know, seems appropriate for the 80s, but yeah, man, I think, I've seen that 90s show at, Oyster Bar, I guess, maybe a year ago, whatever it was. I was working down there that night, and it was packed house, and it's another one of those sing-along nights, all the hits and stuff, and it's a really good time. I guess, if anybody wants a little sneak peek at some of that, what do you guys do? There is I did notice there's a cover of Fly on your guys' live album that you just released, which gets you a little warmed up for some of that 90s Pine style.
A little appetizer.
Yeah.
For what the night has to offer.
Which is one of my favorite tunes in, from that era. And like I remember picking up that Floored record because of Fly,
mm-hmm.
and but really enjoying the rest of it too, like, because like the rest of it's like real heavy,
yeah,
and like that was like the you know, kind of
who knew Sugar Ray, you know, would become what it became.
Sure. Well, and I do love that they always kind of had a sense of humor about it, because like they named the next record 1459.
Yep.
You know, their 15 minutes was about up. So
very, very clever there.
Yeah. But Mark, I listened to a lot of 90s on 9 on the satellite, Sirius Satellite, and Mark is does a show on there, and actually he always says tweet at him and stuff, or so I did one day, and you know, he actually wrote back, so it was pretty neat to kind of have that, you know, it's not much as Twitter, but it's neat to have that interaction with somebody that I grew up you know, watching and stuff, and like, and have them say, you know, thanks and stuff, so.
Totally.
So I was thinking maybe we should send him this, your guy's version of Fly and see what he has to say about it.
He'll probably laugh. Well, I say that just because, you know, he's probably, oh, another one of these bands just covering my stuff.
Right. Yeah, where's my check?
Yeah, right?
Yeah. I did, I was really hoping though, listening to it, that somebody would do the Super Cat, you know, get some of the rap kind of going in there, But it was fun. That whole live record really sounded great. That was recorded at Delmar Hall. Is that right?
Yeah, it was actually a combination recording. Part of it was recorded at Delmar Hall, and then another part was recorded at the Botanical Gardens.
Oh, very cool.
When we played the Whitaker Music Fest.
Yeah, man, those are great shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun out there when it's not you know, a million degrees in July or whatever.
Yeah, or raining.
Yeah.
Where they got to cancel it. But
I've seen a bunch of the Holiday one out there was a whole lot of fun this year, and Funky Boat out there. So I've seen a bunch of really good shows out there.
Yeah, I saw Lamar Harris this year. He put on a great show. And then there were a lot of great shows last year, like Kevin Bowers' Nova was out there. Big Mike was out there. Blue City All-Stars, so... Yeah, they definitely know how to pick their talent, and they keep it local now. I remember they used to bring, like, you know, one or two national acts, which is great, but they really kind of changed the format to feature, like, eight local bands.
Sure.
Now, which is really great.
That's what it should be. I mean, well, you know, do what you want, but, like, we have world-class talent right here, like, you know, that you can, they can all... You know, you could throw a rock and hit their house, and they're, you know, whatever. They're all right here, local. So,
yes, indeed.
Yeah, man. So, but yeah, I really I love that. Like, you know, Big Muddy Blues Festival's all local and everything. You know, like there's a lot of people around the city really embracing what we have here in our music scene and stuff. So,
yeah,
it's great to see.
Yeah.
I did want to ask you about one last group that you're part of, and that's the Meters tribute.
Oh yeah! Almost forgot.
Funkify Your Life, right?
Yeah, another project started. Let's see. Everything seems to like come, you know, be conceived in December.
Yeah.
With me, it seems like that was something that started 2 years ago, two Decembers ago. So that'd be like 2016. I started playing with Big Mike Aguirre and the Blue City All-Stars on, like, the Sunday at Beale when Kevin Bowers couldn't do it. So that was, like, a real nice end because I love playing with those guys, like Andy and Nate and Mike. And, you know, Andy and Nate had been playing... Andy Coco, that is, and Nate Hershey. They've been playing together in this scene for, like, oh, man, since the 90s, you know? And they were... some of the musicians that I would go see, like I said earlier, and I was like, man, it'd be awesome to play with them someday. And lucky enough to play with those guys was a lot of fun to play with. I can easily say that the Meters is probably, well, I hate picking favorites, but yeah, they're definitely one of the favorites.
Sure.
And one of the biggest influences of my life and my playing, really getting into them at an early age, I just wanted to play music, and I found the guys, which is basically Blue City All-Stars, who, like, enjoyed the music just as much as me, and I was like, you guys want to do this show with me? Because I want to do it. I know you all want to do it, and it was great bringing them some tunes, and, like, there's so many hits that they do have, the Meters do, but it's really cool bringing some tunes to the table. Where the fellas were like, I never heard this before. I was like, right? So that was a lot of fun. Once again, that was something that we did. We only had three shows. Mm-hmm. The December show, and then we played last year's Funk Fest, and then this past year's Funk Fest. So that is definitely coming back.
Nice.
And just keep your eyes and ears peeled for Mardi Gras 2019.
There we go.
Definitely got some stuff cooking. And yeah, that's just something to do when I'm home and not traveling. It's really nice to still be able to play with a lot of other musicians and other styles of music when I'm back home, you know, away from like playing with the Pines and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, something that really scratches the itch that, you know, the versatility itch, sure. I guess, you know.
Yeah, man. I mean, versatility is a big part of that, because like you're saying, you got meters, you got some jazz fusion type of stuff, you got some bluegrassy stuff, you're playing Prince, you're doing it all. And I do love that, you know, about you and about a lot of these guys, that like they're not just kind of stuck in one lane. They play a lot of different styles and gigs, and it's just a ton of fun to watch, man. I've been real thankful to become great friends with all you guys and watching you guys play these, you know, shows.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
And it's cool to like see that other musicians do it too. Whether, you know, they're on the road and they come back home, they have some time off, they're going to be gigging too. Mm-hmm. Like the bar gig for a musician, or like the small club gig, that's never going to go away.
Right.
And that, which is great, because you might be on, you know, playing in a band that's playing big stages and theaters and stuff like that, and you kind of lose that intimacy. I mean, there's still a great energy there, don't get me wrong. But say you come home and you're like playing at a club like the Oyster Bar, where they're like right on top of you.
Yeah.
And there's no substitute for that. And even like the biggest touring musicians of today,
sure,
are still doing that and will continue to do that.
Yeah.
So it's once I realized that, I was like, oh man, that's totally fine with me, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, I know. I can't tell you how many times I've gone to, you know, great shows at the Pageant, and then like later on had a lot more fun with like Sean Cannon or somebody at Oyster Bar, mm-hmm. afterwards, just because of that energy that's created in that small room like that. So like, it's just a lot more, you know, a dance party for sure. You know, everybody gets grooving and having a good time, and
totally,
you know, it doesn't always happen at those bigger theater shows or bigger stages and things. That, you know, again, they're great, but there's just a certain energy that's created inside that small club
show. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, man, but that's never going to go away. I was going to say, we mentioned talking about, Andy and Nathan and stuff, and Kevin and stuff, but I heard the name, but I, first time I got to see him, was Funk Fest with that, their group, Fuck Monster, over there.
Oh yeah. That's, that is Kevin on drums.
Yeah.
Nate on keys, Dave Grelly on keys and synths, and, Teddy Pressburg on guitar, who I believe now lives in Portland. I never really got to... I met Teddy for the first time this Funk Fest.
Yeah.
You know, he kind of moved out before I was, like, playing in the scene around here.
Right.
So, but yeah, that was another... another juggernaut, you know, around St. Louis.
I guess that was their first gig in, like, 6 years or something like that. Something along those lines.
I think they only played at Funk Fest, and that was, like, their... Yeah. First Funk Fest gig in like 5 years or something like that.
But
sounds about
right. It blew my mind, man. That was a ton of fun, and but it's cool to see that some of those groups that only, you know, maybe one offs for Funk Fest or whatever it is. So I'm excited that we might be getting another Funkifier Life show coming up soon. So
yeah,
be a good time, man.
There'll be more room on the table for that, and. You know, as far as, you know, we're all interested in it, and people want to hear it, and people want to play it, you know.
Yeah.
Same thing for, like, you know, Southern Exposure and all that other stuff, you know.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Well, again, you can get find all this information. There's a Southern Exposure page. There's, like I said, Mighty Pines and all the bands we mentioned, Transmitter Express and the People's Key. Get involved online with all these projects. Again, a lot of this music's available digitally wherever you're getting music at today. And so get out and come see a show. And but yeah, I can't thank you enough, Mike. This has been awesome getting to hang out and chat and getting to share some of these stories, man.
Right on. Thanks for having me once again.
Yeah, man. I will definitely be seeing you soon down at Oyster Bar at these upcoming shows, man. So it's going to be a good night.
Look forward to it.
All right, buddy. I'll see you soon.
All right. Take care.
Bye, everybody.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.